the underground bunker of the Civitas Studio in Raleigh, North Carolina, it's Civitalk with your hosts, Brooke Medina and Ray Nothstein. We're here to connect culture with civics, making it relevant to your daily life. And dare we say, existence at a time where too many are triggered and offended. So, relax, but buckle up, and let's wade into the deep end. What's really happening in your old North State?
Welcome to another edition of Civitalk. Jussie Smollett, it's a hot topic right now. We're going to discuss that. We're going to look at a Civitas polls that have just been released. We had a fun day lunch in Raleigh with some of our supporters and fans talking over the latest of the Civitas polls. And if we have time, we'll delve into the Mueller report. So, Brooke, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I am so happy that we have got some good weather headed up our way, it seems like. So if you're listening to this on Monday morning, which that's when it goes live on iTunes and Google, or if you're listening to it on the radio, which it airs throughout the weekend on various stations across the state, hopefully you are enjoying some good weather and a reprieve from the raininess. But how are you doing, Ray?
I'm doing really well. I'm going to get slaughtered by somebody because I can't remember off the top of my head. I know it's near Kinston, but my family and I are going to a bluegrass festival in Kinnonsville, North Carolina. It's a little southeast of us, so that'll be a lot of fun.
So it's like authentic bluegrass.
Oh, yeah. Ralph Stanley 2 is going to be there. Doyle Lawson and Quicksilver. Those are big names in bluegrass, especially in the traditional field of bluegrass. And there's going to be 7 breweries there, too.
Ooh,
so I'm excited about that.
What's your favorite kind of beer?
This is kind of funny because in college, it was my least favorite beer, but I like a lot of wheat beers now.
Do you?
Yep.
I'm not a beer drinker.
Yeah.
I don't like beer, but
like
I do
cider.
Like a good hard cider. Yep.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. But you know what? So what we're doing this weekend, well, not technically this weekend, actually at the end of the work week, is my husband is retiring from the United States Army after 20 years. And so his retirement ceremony is tomorrow. So
that's super exciting. I remember going to my dad's retirement ceremony and it was really cool. And just watching that. And I know he paid tribute to the 8th Air Force, who were amazing aviators who flew missions over Nazi Germany and just all of Europe, really, in World War II and Japan, too, to some degree. So that was really cool. I thought that he paid tribute to those people that had gone before him. And I know that your husband is, very proud of his service, as he should be. And, he's got a lot of great friends. You always tell good stories about some of the friends that he's known in the Army and men that he's served with. And I just think that's so cool that he had the opportunity to serve his country, especially at a young age and retire early. I know he'll continue to
work. I know he's a young guy to be retiring already, but this is, he joined at 19 years old. So he's at the 20-year mark, so you can do the math there. But he's looking forward to this next chapter. But there are a lot of good memories for our entire family as a military family, moving across the country and experiencing that unique subculture of American culture, which is the military population. And both of Ray and I grew up as military brats. And so we understand that culture a lot. And definitely it is, I'm sure, played into just the way we see the world.
And, oh, for sure. I think it definitely does to some degree.
Very, very grateful for the service. So if you are a veteran or a parent or spouse of a veteran or child, thank you all for your service. But let's go ahead and kick it off. Ray, what did you want to be when you grew up? Because this is what we wanted to start off with.
Yeah,
right?
We wanted to talk a little bit because we were talking a little bit with our new friend, Chris, who we met at the Civitas poll lunch. He's in the computer fields.
And he's a listener.
So it was great to meet a listener. We have so many, but it was great to talk to one up front, in person. And he's a super nice guy. So hopefully he'll be listening to this episode soon. And, we just started talking a little bit about vocation. And so I thought it'd be good to kick it off with, things that we wanted to be when we were young. And I think one of the first things I wanted to be when I was real, real young, and probably all boys go through this, was a fireman.
Yes, that is a classic one.
Because they were so manly, right? And they were daring, brave, dash into burning buildings and get to play on big trucks. And my uncle is a retired state policeman, and so I wanted to be a state policeman for a while, too. And he worked on the Jimmy Hoffa investigation in Michigan, and
Who is Jimmy Hoffa?
What? Stop, Brooke. People are laughing at you. Jimmy Hoffa.
For those people that don't know, I'm asking on behalf of them.
Yes, right. I know Brooke knows who Jimmy Hoffa is, but he was president of the Teamsters Association or Union in the 1970s and before that too. I think his body disappeared maybe in the early 70s. I don't know about the exact date, but they've been looking for his body ever since. He was mixed up with organized crime and racketeering, bribes. Some people love Jimmy Hoffa. Some people obviously were out to get him. The government was out to get him because he was breaking the law and. he was murdered by probably some associate or a rival or something. But, you know, there's rumors about where his body is buried all over this country. Some people thought it was buried under Tiger Stadium or the Pontiac Silverdome in the Detroit area. And there's been other theories out there. But
okay,
you can go Google that if you don't know who Jimmy Hoffa is and want to learn about that.
Thank you for telling our
movies
audience.
I
knew who he was.
Yeah, there's movies been made about him, too. I wanted to be the shortstop for the Red Sox for a while when I lived up in New Hampshire. And I remember wanting to be a senator, too, at one point. I knew I wasn't going to be president because I was like, you can't think that big, right? But I do remember at one point wanting to be a senator. I thought that would be cool. You know, I thought that'd be like access to like money and women and all that stuff. And
priorities, it's not really, right?
Priorities.
And then you grew up.
I didn't really care about like, you know, helping people or constituent services.
Little window into Ray's child brain when he was a kid. Right. That's what motivated him. Okay, Ray, really quickly before we go on to what I wanted to be when I was a child. John is watching on Facebook Live and he said that you were rocking that tie. So...
Oh, thank you, John.
Good fashion choice, Ray. Okay, so what I wanted to be when I was a child was I was really, really interested. I've just always been a curious person, and so I just like to know how things work and just, you know, what's going on, who's who. Obviously, I didn't know Jimmy Hoffa, but I wanted to be either an FBI or a CIA agent. So I wanted to investigate and be really sneaky and secretive and find out secrets. And part of this, the way it manifested itself when I was a child, was not only was I curious, I guess some people would call me nosy.
Yeah, well, people just walked by the office and Brooke was like freaking out before we started taping. She's like, who is that? What are they doing here? And I was like, it's going
to
be okay.
Inquiring minds need
and then,
to know.
And then Brooke's mind started leaping. Are we moving? Is this happening? So it was pretty funny.
So Ray just got front row seat. I haven't changed much since a child, I guess. But I wanted to do that, you know, be an FBI agent. But so as a kid, for fun, what I would do is I would get my dad's police scanner and I would go to my room and I would listen to just what's going on in the neighborhood and listen to all the crime reports and stuff. And so it was just interesting.
Have you ever listened to the Chicago police scanner?
I have not.
You can. There's an app for
That's
like different
be terrifying. Police.
It's pretty terrifying. It's like gunshots every few minutes on the police scanner, especially on the south side.
I mean, I listened
obviously.
To the Fayetteville one growing up, so it's kind of close.
Yeah, probably.
But anyways, okay, so that's what we wanted to be when we grew up. So I'd be curious to hear from you guys if you're watching on Facebook. What was your desire to be?
I think it's too late maybe for you to be an FBI or CIA agent. Isn't that cut off at like 30 or something where you have
to
go?
Who says I'm past 30, Ray?
Oh, that's right. You're much younger. I just assumed you might be 31 because you had four kids.
They could be all 2 years old.
That's true. It could be quadruple.
No secrets around Ray. My goodness.
But so, okay. Brooke is probably about... Somewhere
Don't
between
even try to
24
save it.
And
Don't even try to save
30
it.
And a half.
Okay, actually, I told my five-year-old, who is my youngest, and he asked me the other day, he said, Mommy, how old are you? And so I told him I was 18. And so that's what he tells people. So because he likes to tell people information that he probably shouldn't, so you just don't tell him the facts. So.
But don't you worry if you're a woman, do you not want to be too far off, like saying 18? Because obviously people are going to be like... Man.
It's going to be funny. Like, it's just so hyperbolic that it's funny.
It's funny.
No, I don't lie about my age, though. But I don't divulge that information.
I'm going to be 40 in April.
Wow.
So
over
I'll
the
be,
hill.
Yeah. It's kind of been downhill since about...
It's kind of been downhill.
15. I don't know. I don't know when I peak. 14 or 15.
After that, those are the golden years. Right. Oh, that's funny. Okay. So speaking of Chicago, though, you had touched on Chicago. And so we wanted to actually share our thoughts and hear you all's thoughts on Jussie Smollett's case and the charges that were dropped on him. So, Ray, why don't you start off and share a little bit of that?
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, the big media outrage or just outrage on social media right now is the charges being dropped of Jussie Smollett. He was charged with 16 felonies that had to do with him impersonating or falsifying a hate crime. He accused two individuals, white males with Make America Great Again hats. Was it in a subway? I can't remember where he
claimed.
Oh, I
think it was down an alley or on
the
side
of the street. Yeah, an alley or some area of Chicago that he was attacked and, you know, his face was bruised up and he had some cuts and abrasions. He said that two Make America Great Again white men had attacked him. Of course, Smollett is a minority. He's black and he's gay. And so that created a lot of...
And famous.
Yeah, that created a lot of angst, and rightfully so, if that did happen. A lot of angst in certain minority communities, I won't say all, but in certain communities that created angst and a level of concern about rising hate crimes in this nation. And so, you know, when I first saw the story, I was immediately skeptical, not because you know, I tend to be more of a Trump supporter, more on the right, but I'm just skeptical of a lot of these claims from celebrities, especially in terms of hate crimes, just because I've been in some instances. College was one where I saw people falsifying hate crimes and running with that. So I've always been a little bit skeptical sometimes of these claims. And well, Smollett's charges were dropped by the prosecutor and judge.
Yep, they were dismissed.
Dismissed.
The case was sealed.
Yep. So there's been a lot of controversy as Michelle Obama played a role in helping the charges dropped.
And the reason why that has even come up is because, so I was reading a Fox News report on this, and you can find the Daily Mail had one as well. I mean, everybody's covering it right now, especially because of the high profile nature of Jussie Smollett, as well as Rahm Emanuel, who's the mayor of Chicago, has been speaking out loudly against the decision to overturn his case. But what's interesting is that the former chief of staff of Michelle Obama called the state's attorney about the case, and that that chief of staff was saying, you know, the Smollett family is very concerned. But shortly after that, the state's attorney recused herself, and then the court sealed the record.
Yep.
And the charges were dropped. So that's really, really fishy. But one poll quote from the Fox News article was that policemen work their butts off to do a good job, and this is what they get. The least a prosecutor could have done was to send it to the grand jury. It's no wonder policemen get discouraged. And I think that's one component of this, too. You devote that much time. You said
at least hundreds of man hours. There were at some point 25 detectives on the case, so obviously a lot of those detectives were pulled off other cases, probably many of them murder cases. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you saw an outraged police chief who, you know, I thought his comments were right on. He talked about the importance of having integrity in your work and being a man of integrity. He was standing next to, of course, Mayor Rahm Emanuel, who's often criticized on the right, but he's actually been one of the more centrist mayors of Chicago
in recent
decades.
Didn't he even say not too long ago, he was talking about how there's actually a problem with family structure in Chicago, and there needs to be more fathers, and he came under attack.
He's been very open to taking on the teachers' unions in Chicago, too. I mean, he's been somebody who's kind of been in the center, much more to the center, I would say, than past Chicago mayors who were more, I would say, just sort of inflexible in their political positions. And Emanuel has been much more of a centrist. And, of course, his career goes back before Obama in Chicago, too. So he's somebody that I think he understands the politics of this. He understands that there's going to be, even in this, you know, we think of Chicago as being a deep blue area, and it is, but he understands that there's going to be repercussions for completely throwing the police department under the bus. People don't like to see unfairness. They don't like to see people above the law. Here's a quote, Brooke, from a former police chief of Chicago. I think he spoke off the record, but he did say that he was one of the former police chiefs. He said, "Politicians run for office promising to change the way things are done, and this is what they do," he said. "Policemen work their butts off to do a good job, and this is what they get. You know, the least the prosecutor could have done was send it to the grand jury. It was no wonder policemen get discouraged."
Yeah.
So, I mean, you read that before, and I think it's something that, you know, you really got to highlight on, because, look, nobody should be above the law. No one should be protected because of their, whether their fame or their money. They shouldn't get special treatment. Now, you are going to be able to hire a better attorney. I understand all that. There's that aspect of the judicial system. But, you know, there should be blind justice in our society. We think of the statue of the lady that's blindfolded, and you know, we need to have a better version of that, I think, in our contemporary society than we do.
Mm-hmm. Well, we were talking about that before the show, right? Just the need for real justice. And there was a quote that I had read before the show, but I don't know where it's at the moment, but it just alluded to this fact that this injustice had occurred, not only the on the judicial side of this, but also on the societal front, because when people just begin to make these sort of fallacious charges against other people, and entire groups of people get lumped in with it, whether it's blacks, whites, Hispanic, right, or Asians, anybody, Native Americans, it begins to dig up and reveal and expose old wounds that didn't necessarily need to be exposed in that way because of a fake false charge. Now, if it were a real charge and something really had happened, it needs to be dealt with to the maximum extent of the law, I would say. But I think that this serves to desensitize people to real racial injustices. Yeah. And it creates
copycat crimes.
Yeah. Mm. I find that really heartbreaking and frustrating, because there are people that are victims of racial injustice. It's kind of like the Me Too movement. We talked about this when we interviewed AP Dillon yesterday. And so her CivitaTalk interview will be going up shortly. And that's on the untested rape test kits in our state, because our state is the leader in untested rape kits. It's just that there is this desire to conflate every sort of sexual harassment claim and put them all under the umbrella of sexual assault. Mm-hmm. And then there's these people that cry wolf and they're not really victims of they don't have a real Me Too moment. And then that in turn leads to a silencing of those that truly are victims, or there's a lot more skepticism surrounding their claims and stories. And that's just not how it should be. Victimhood shouldn't be a game that we're playing. It should be something where we actually stand up for those that have been unjustly treated.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the discouraging things about some of these stories that we read about. I mean, I remember being in the South and there were some black churches that were burned down. And of course the Justice Department came in, the FBI came in, and it was arsonists. Some of them were insurance fraud. There may have been a few, I don't remember, that were actually burned down by hate groups, but I don't think so. I think most of them were perpetuated by either individuals in the church or individuals within that minority community for attention. And I think sometimes when you perpetuate these crimes and try to frame people, then you're going to lose the trust of the American people, and you're going to lose the trust of folks that I think naturally just want to reach out and help people. They naturally want everybody to get along. They naturally want to respect people of different cultures, different races. And it's, to me, what's unfortunate too is the media, I think, fuels some of this division and really does it in a way to kind of frame more division than there really needs to be or ever should be in our culture and society. And I think that's really unfortunate. And this whole notion of just trying to be a victim today too, I think, is unfortunate. You see this with a lot of young people and on college campus culture, where they're aggrieved or they're triggered or this or that, or somebody said something that was offensive and they go attack them and they still claim that they're the victim. I mean, it's just outrageous that we see this in our culture.
Yeah,
Jussie
Smollett's attorney, I think, was alluding to the fact that they were still considering suing the Chicago Police Department for this.
Yeah.
Like, I'm incredulous by that.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that was even the most outrageous to me is that they couldn't even get him to admit any guilt, or, you know, he just kind of went out of the courtroom and was taking selfies, and they couldn't even get some kind of apology that he wasted all this police time and mm-hmm. All this time of the city of Chicago. At least the people that were doing their due diligence and doing the right thing, he wasted much of their time. But we got to move on. So let's talk about these important Civitas polls, Brooke. I mean, you've done a lot of work on this, writing press releases, and I know that you had some good commentary on the abortion aspect of this as well. So let us know some of the big breakdowns on this Civitas poll, why it's important for North Carolinians and also people, you know, watching and listening from out of state, why these polls are important, not just for upcoming election, but what they tell us about people here in the state.
Well, first off, if you're from out of state or even those in North Carolina, North Carolina is a battleground state. And so going into 2020, there's going to be the Republican National Convention is actually going to be in Charlotte, North Carolina, but it is largely a purple state. So we like to make sure that we at Civitas are keeping our finger on the pulse of public opinion here in the state, because that really, you know, politics is downstream from culture. And if that's the case, what the public is thinking and feeling are indicative of what we can see maybe coming down the line later on politically. So one issue that we decided to poll was abortion. And I would say some people are discouraged by the results of this abortion poll, but I am actually encouraged.
I was a little discouraged in some ways.
You were? Okay. So I actually thought it would be, or I thought it was better than what I anticipated.
Okay.
So we asked, first off, just to get a general sense of where people were at, whether or not they identified as pro-life or pro-choice. And 50% of North Carolinians identify as pro-life, whereas 40% identify as pro-choice and 10% were unsure, which I thought was kind of interesting, or they refused to answer.
I think most people probably, I think more of that 10% were probably people who didn't want to say.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was the case. But, you know, at the national level, there was a recent Marist poll last month, and 47% of Americans identify as pro-life, whereas 47% identify as pro-choice. So they're even more split. So we've got a 3-point advantage, I would say, over the national level. And so that, to me, was encouraging. I think it's trending in the right direction, except among young people. So among younger millennials and some Gen Zers, they're the ones that are net pro-choice.
There's been some national polls in the last few years that have showed young people trending pro-life, so that's a little bit different.
Yeah, so I think we need to poll this again just to get a better idea. If was it just the sample? We sampled 500 North Carolinians, and you can find those cross tabs and everything at nccivitas.org, and then go to the polling tab. But after we asked them whether or not they were pro-life or pro-choice, we talked to them about where they if they thought that abortion should be restricted after 13 weeks or not. There was a bill that would be presented, or maybe already has been presented, at the General Assembly talking about banning abortions after 13 weeks unless there's a medically necessary reason not to.
Yeah, they're kind of known as the fetal heartbeat bills, right, that have passed in various other states.
Right, which would actually restrict it, I think, starting at 6 weeks.
Right.
But this is important and very timely, not only because it's dealing with a very vulnerable population of Americans, but also because a federal judge just overturned North Carolina's 20-week abortion prohibition. So for us to even talk about moving it to 13 weeks, that's something up in the air right now that's working its way through the courts. But among those that identified as pro-choice, when we asked them if they thought abortion should be restricted after 13 weeks, 35 or 38% of them that were pro-choice believed it should. So even among that pro-choice population, there are at least a third of them that still think that after 13 weeks, abortions shouldn't be legal. So I think that that's some headway that policymakers can make and realize that just because someone says they're pro-choice, they do still oftentimes have very clear moral lines that they believe that shouldn't be crossed.
Yeah. You know, ultimately for me, I know you're the same way. I mean, these abortion numbers are interesting, but ultimately, when it comes to doing the right thing and restoring justice to the unborn, the polls, they matter in terms of where our culture is headed. But, you know, slavery polled very well. Slavery was very popular in the early Republic. And certainly in the Deep South, slavery was a god of sorts. So,
because,
you know,
it was an economic god in some ways, right?
Yeah, there was an economic god too. But there was a, yeah, I mean, there was that aspect where they really didn't view those people as the same as them or human or even human. So, I mean, the positive thing on the life issue has been the breakthroughs in technology. Obviously, things like ultrasound, 3D imaging has had a profound effect, I think, in moving the needle, at least to some extent, on right to life issues. But, you know, no matter whatever what the polling says, you know, you want to be somebody who, certainly as a Christian or a believer, that protects innocent life and stands up for innocent life, that makes them a part of your witness in your community, your witness in terms of wherever you go in the culture, and reminding people that these are humans, these are people that were just like us. You know, we were just like them at one point, and you know, to discard them to me is just such a travesty. And really, this is the greatest, I think, civil rights issue and human rights issue of our time. You know, we talk about tearing down statues and things like that, but you know, I do hope this, and I hate to have any division in this country, but I hope at one point we look back on this period where, gosh, I mean, it's been, what, 40 or 50 million abortions since Roe v. Wade, and we look back and say, how did we ever let anything like this happen? How did we kill off so many people from a generation? I mean, it's worse than the Holocaust. It's worse than all these great tragedies that often get a little bit more attention in our culture, and to me, it's a travesty, and I don't know how to really describe it without just kind of being emotional about it to some degree, because these are real people. They have a right to life. I think Jefferson talked about the right to life being the most important right in government. If it is to be instituted, he talked about it as protecting life and protecting people. And that's what government should be about. And if you can't rely on your government to even do that bare minimum, then I think it shows a broader problem in this nation that we've been dealing with for decades and decades. I mean, this is not just something that's come along recently, but this has been a broader problem, and we could go into why that's a broader problem, but we probably will on a future episode.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. It's a human dignity issue, and even science backs that up. So if anything, if you're going to take a stance on abortion, you might as well take the pro-science stance. If you can't be compelled morally, or if you're having a hard time persuading someone of the morality of it, of resisting abortion, then you at least can, hopefully, if they're reasonable enough, convince them based on just the science. But let's go ahead and also talk about the Electoral College, because we spoke with our audience about that last week, and there were a lot of comments. We got a lot of engagement on that.
Popular issue, yep.
Yep, it very much is.
People are fired up.
With Elizabeth Warren, Senator Warren, she's running for the presidency, and she has proposed that we eliminate the Electoral College, in part because oftentimes if a president is going to be elected with enough electoral votes but misses the popular vote, as was the case in 2016, it's generally a Republican that would benefit rather than a Democrat. And so it's natural, I would imagine, for a Democrat to want to see the Electoral College rescinded. However, that's a constitutional embedded practice and system in place of electing the president. And I really believe that there is a strong case to be made because we're a republic and not a democracy. And so there is this tyranny of the majority or the minority that can happen But with the Electoral College, there are some systems in place that at least give the spread of that demand whoever is running for office to actually pay a decent amount of attention to other states that maybe otherwise would not necessarily get some of that policy and political attention that they deserve. But yeah. What are your thoughts on this?
Well,
and what
I
are
just,
the results?
I think the big thing is that, well, I don't know why, and they never should, but why a smaller state would ever give up their sovereignty, because they would not matter at all in a presidential election. So if they gave up their electoral ballots and became, decided we're going to go on the popular vote mantra, they would be completely overwhelmed by big urban areas, Los Angeles, New York, Chicago, big media markets. So any state that did that, even if you're just a blue state, it makes no sense, because you would be completely overwhelmed and swamped by urban America, by big cities and states. Even North Carolina, which is a growing and bigger state to some degree compared to some states, would be overwhelmed by the big urban areas, mm-hmm. and environments, and candidates would only focus on those issues. So the results were 47% want to change in North Carolina to a popular vote model, and 43% wanted to keep the Electoral College, and then 10% were unsure or refused to answer.
So this is interesting because, okay, 4 points... there's a 4-point difference between those that want the national popular vote and those that want to keep the Electoral College. However, there was a bill that was presented at the General Assembly, and Andy Jackson, our elections policy fellow, wrote about this. And what it would do is essentially put North Carolina in an interstate treaty where they agreed, where our state agreed to give all of our electoral votes to whoever won the national popular
That's
vote.
That's so stupid. Because what if North Carolina goes the opposite way? They were basically,
we're
sticking up our middle finger at our citizenry, just like they did on the constitutional amendment for those two constitutional amendments that were overruled.
Oh, yeah, the voter ID and income tax cap. But so when North Carolinians were asked whether or not they supported that bill, 29% said that they favored us giving our electoral votes to the winner of the popular vote at the national level, whereas 55% opposed it. So even though...
when they get more information about the Electoral College, they tend to change their mind. And I think that's an important key component of this poll.
Yeah, exactly. It also, I believe, highlights, because they were kind of all over the place, because then there was another question that's a little too in the weeds. But if you want to look at it, you can check it out at our website. I think that this really highlighted, to me at least, the need for better civic education on what the Electoral College's purpose is and how it's advantageous over a popular vote.
Yep, absolutely, Brooke. So. We should hit real quick on the Mueller report. Any thoughts? Because we are out of time, Brooke.
Yeah, sadly, this time has blown by. No collusion, according to the Mueller report.
Are you going to wear your Make America Great Again hat in the office? Do you feel more comfortable now that you can break out all your regalia in here?
My closet Trump.
Are you bringing the mug back? I mean,
I've got a Trump mug. So my sister, for my birthday or Christmas, she gave me
I love how you're like being very dismissive now when you used to brag about it every day. Oh, yeah, I have a Trump mug, guys.
You know, I forgot about it. I don't know where it's at, to be honest with you. Uh-huh. But my sister gave me a Hillary Clinton mask and a President Trump mug a couple of years ago during the 2016 election. So just depended on which audience I was from, which one I would wear, or in front of which audience I was in front of. But anyways, okay, so Mueller report, no collusion were the findings, and there was just like a liberal meltdown about that. They're like, but.
Yeah.
So anyways, I'm just glad it's over, but I don't think it's really over. Congress
no,
is going
over.
To start investigating. And but to me, if it were happening on the other side with a very progressive president, and I found out that he had not colluded with a foreign country to win the election, I would be so grateful.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want any president, regardless of what their policy stances are, to collude with another nation. So I was grateful that it's over with, but sad that there's still so much division in our country.
Yeah, I think that's really the saddest part is to see. I think just real quickly from a 10,000-foot level, the big takeaway from this, I think, is just sort of the media tantrums and the media letdown. In some ways, this is almost absurd to say, but I think people that like Trump actually recognize this, and people who at least tacitly support Trump to some level. Trump has been more right on the Mueller investigation than the media. The people that are supposed to be, you know, the truth tellers and the people that are supposed to be the ones looking into Trump. Mm-hmm. Trump's comments were actually more accurate. And you can quibble about some of his comments in certain places and whether he should have been making comments about Mueller's report to begin with. But his analysis of the whole thing was much more accurate than the media, which was just so inflamed and really throwing tantrums and going crazy about this. And it only helps the president. I think this will position him well for 2020. It certainly positions him much better than he would have been if there would have been more serious repercussions come out of this. But, I've always been very skeptical of this story. I thought it was more of a Hillary and Obama concoction to sort of explain away why she lost and why she was a failed candidate and flawed candidate from the get-go. I mean, she was an awful a very awful candidate that the Democrats put forward, and very broken and a very petty person if you watch that election night where she basically refused to concede until the next day. But anyways, we are out of time, Brooke. I think we have to cut it off, but we're going to have a great show next week, and we'll have two shows up on this week. So if you get on Google Play or iTunes, you will find both. You'll find one Friday.
We'll be downloading shows on Fridays and Mondays, so stay tuned, and you will have Civitalk twice a week now.